is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Mary Anastasia O'Grady, the America's editor and columnist for the Wall Street Journal editorial board, to comment on news items that are tumbling around us about Cuba and a success so far. I read from the art newspaper recently. Cuban artists aligned with the artist and activist group 27N have asked Jorge Fernandez, the director of the Museum of Fine Arts in Havana, to remove their works from display as a form of protest against the treatment of Luis Manuel Otero Alcantara, the artist 27N member and founder of the San Isidro movement, who was forcibly taken from his home in early May to Havana's General Calixto Garcia University Hospital by Cuban security forces, ending an eight-day hunger strike against the government's restrictions on artists' freedom. Mary, I read from your column in the Wall Street Journal, your update, that Mr. Otero has now been released from custody at the university hospital. Also, that there's much more at play here than just art protesting. Who is he, and what is the San Isidro movement that threatens the regime so that they brutalize a young man? Good evening to you.
Well, good evening, John, and thank you for having me. Luis Manuel Otero Alcantara is a 33-year-old guy, an artist, lives in a section of Havana called San Isidro, and basically wants to do his art. And he and a group of other artists began protesting regime censorship back in 2018, and they became sort of this San Isidro movement. In the fall, and I wrote about him in December, he and the artists had a confrontation with the regime. And the confrontation was such that hundreds of artists came out in the streets, went across the street from the Ministry of Culture and protested. And the ministry actually had to eventually agree to meet with them, which is a big defeat for the ministry. I mean, they really didn't do anything about their censorship laws, but they did agree to meet with them. And this struggle goes on. You know, the artists are protesting. The artists are, making their unhappiness known and so forth. And then they and their response, the regime's response, is to harass these people. They put them in jail. They take them out. They put them back in. They surveil them all the time. They follow them around. They send, thugs to do things to harass them. And at one point, they raided Mr. Otero's apartment, and they took his artwork. So he went on a hunger strike in April to say that he wasn't going to eat until they returned his artwork. And on May the 2nd, of course, as his physical condition deteriorated, he became a bigger and bigger news item. And he has gotten a lot of support internationally. So the regime was worried. I mean, if he died, that was going to be big trouble for their, international image, which, believe it or not, they do care about. So they swept in and they carted him off to the hospital, supposedly to give him medical care. But he was totally incommunicado from May the 2nd all the way through to the beginning of this week. And at one point they released on social media through their surrogates a video of him in the hospital room where he looked really unwell. And people were very concerned, and more people were calling for his release, and that's why I wrote the column.
The larger story is persecution of artists. You've written recently about a song, for example, that the people who sing it or the people who wrote the song about living in Cuba are persecuted. The hospital where he was taken was a hospital that you introduced me to many years ago, Mary, when a young woman died there in custody. She was one of the women in white. So the hospital is associated with brutality or mystery. So the larger story is, what does the regime fear from an artist living in San Isidro, from anyone who associates themselves with music? Why fear them?
Well, I mean, artists have always been a problem for totalitarian regimes. And I would add that, you know, it's not only, this persecution is not only aimed at artists. As you mentioned, the ladies in white were the housewives and sisters and mothers of political prisoners. And they would walk dressed in white in the street on their way to church on Sunday, carrying a flower silently, totally silently. This was a huge threat to the regime. And now the artist community is also saying, look, we don't want to be gagged. And, you know, art is a wonderful way, wonderful vehicle for political criticism. And in the case of the song that you were mentioning, you know, the old revolutionary slogan is Patria o Muerte, which means, you know, fatherland or homeland or death. And that was something Che Guevara said and Fidel Castro and all those revolutionaries. And just in February, this group of Cuban musicians, some of whom live in Cuba, some who live in Miami in Spain, they released a very catchy tune called Patria y Vida, which means homeland and life, in which they are sharply critical of the regime and basically saying, telling these guys, you know, your time is up, get out. We don't want to deal with this anymore. Part of what's going on is generational. I mean, look, many people over the years have fought against this totalitarian regime, but it's very interesting to see young people who basically look at the claims of the so-called revolution. They have connectivity with peers in Miami, in Spain, in the Dominican Republic, in Mexico, and they know that the rest of the world doesn't live in a rat hole like they do. So they're saying, don't talk to me about your revolution. This place is a mess. And by the way, I don't want to be gagged. So there's a generational thing going on here where people just don't relate to all of this indoctrination about the Great Revolution and the bearded revolutionaries and all. They don't care about them. They have no respect for them. Otero Alcantara told me in December when I interviewed him, I said, what did you think of Fidel Castro? He says, I think he was a bad person. Anybody who puts someone in jail for writing a poem is a bad person. So, you know, they're just not buying it anymore. And, you know, as I say, the artist community is particularly effective at this, and it has a lot of support from the international community, which I think is also bothering the regime.
And that letter that the artist wrote, was that effective? Is that a good way to communicate displeasure? And or did the regime act because of that letter and your column, of course, Mary?
Well, I don't know about my column, but the letter, which ran in the New York Review of Books, was signed by 30 writers from around the world. What was interesting about that letter is at least some, I wasn't familiar with all the names of the authors, the intellectuals who signed the letter, but some of them, you would, in this country, you would consider them very left-wing people, you know, supporters of the, you know, critical race theory or, you know, a lot of favorite ideals of the left. And yet they're looking at this inhumane treatment of an artist in Cuba and saying, you know, this is not what we're in favor of. And so I think that that's really dangerous for the regime, because it's one thing for the Wall Street Journal to be against the totalitarian government in Havana, but it's another thing for people, you know, to lose the support of the intellectual class that has for a very long time been gung-ho on the revolution, mostly because it was anti-American. They don't really care about Cubans, but it was because it was anti-American, and are now saying, wait a minute, you know, putting that aside and really focusing on the fact that so many of these people who are being abused in Cuba are artists, and therefore that there's a certain solidarity among the intellectual class. That is has to be very troubling for the regime.
Mary Anastasia O'Grady, The Wall Street Journal. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bachelor.